Purai by the hooves. Shudaprahi. Compared to a sharp weapon. Darayan. Penetrating. Tat. That. Apaha. Water. Utparapara. Found the limitation of the unlimited. Triparuhu. The master of all sacrifices. Rasayam. Within the water. Dadarsha. Found. Dham. The earth. Tatra. There. Sushupsuhu. Lying. Agre. In the beginning. Yam. Whom. Jivadhanim. The resting place for all living entities. Swayam. Personally. Abhyadatta. Uplifted. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Boar penetrated the water with his hooves, which were like sharp arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. Purport. The word Rasayam is sometimes interpreted to mean Rasatala, the lowest planetary system, but that is not applicable in this connection. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we didn't read his commentary yesterday, the Earth is seven times superior to the other planetary systems, namely Tala, Atala, Talatala, Vitala, Rasatala, Patala, etc. Therefore, the Earth cannot be situated in the Rasatala planetary system. It is described in the Vishnu Dharma. Patala Muleshvara Bhoga Sanghatao Vinyasya Padao Prithivim Jabibrataha Yasyopamano Nababuva Sotyuto Ramastu Mangalya Vividaye Rasihi Harihi. Therefore, the Lord found the earth at the bottom of the Garbhodaka ocean, where the planets rest during the devastation at the end of Brahma's day. So, Rasa is taken by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to mean the Garbhodaka ocean itself. Rasatala planets of the whole Patala seven planet system is above that. The Garbhodaka ocean is the bottom half of the universal shell. And the Patala region is, relatively speaking, from the dimensions of the whole shell, just below the surface of the earth. You know, the Patala system is not very far, measuring from the top to the bottom of the whole shell, not very far, not a great percentage below the flat surface of the Bhuloka system. So this Rasa is way below that. The Garbhodaka ocean is not ordinary material water. It emanates from the body of the Supreme Lord. So it's an auspicious region. In fact, Buddhists want to merge into that water or into the causal ocean. This is their goal. A dark region of liberation, as opposed to the bright Brahmajyoti region aspired to by the Advaitavadis. We aspire to the lotus feet of the Lord. And therefore, our interest is in the narrations of the incarnations of the Lord. Avataranucharitam, Hares Chasyanu Vardinam Krita Ishikata Prokta. This is Ishikata. Aryanchus is an Ishikata. But Ishikata is narration of the activities of the Lord himself, or if the Lord is not doing anything at the moment, we can meditate on his transcendental form, static meditation. That is also, well, that's not Ishikata, but it's meditation on the Lord. It's Vishnu Smaranam. Or we can meditate on the activities of his devotees, Tasyanu Vartinam Cha, of his followers. And that is basically what we find described in Srimad Bhagavatam, are the activities of the Supreme Lord and the activities of his devotees. There's some static description. There's some in the beginning of the Shukadeva's instructions at the commencement of the second canto. He describes meditation on the form of the Lord. In fact, he gives a few different forms. He mentions Omkara, but you can't do much with Omkara. Then he describes meditation on the universal form. Then meditation on the Supersoul. And then the demigods as forms of the Lord. Worship of the demigods is another kind of meditation. Or foot off the book. Got it off? But that's just introduction. That's just preliminary meditation for those who have a hard time accepting that the Supreme is a person with personality and activities. So the static meditation is for those who cannot tolerate the dynamics, who cannot let the Lord be active. So he's super soul for them, or universal form. And he stands still because they don't want him to move. But if we let him, he moves. He has his activities. If we let him, show them. And that's the real focus of interest of the Bhagavatam, are the dynamic activities of the Lord and his devotees. The devotees are also described statically, to the point that some of them are just mentioned. Some of the members of the dynasties of the sun and the moon are just mentioned by name. Son of so-and-so and the father of so-and-so. We don't even know what he did or who he was. And he probably wasn't somebody so extremely important that nothing is mentioned about him. He may have been a great man in material estimation, but from the transcendental perspective, the standard of the Bhagavatam, he wasn't someone worth wasting more than one line on. Son of so-and-so, father of so-and-so. He was begotten by him, and he begot him. And that's all we know about him. So there are some static descriptions of the devotees also. But some of them, their activities are described. And some of them are not pure devotees. Some of them get into trouble. Like Agnidra, son of Priyavrata? Is that right, Priyavrata's son? Who became infatuated with an apsara and went to her planet. That was his goal after life. That was his perfection. And who else? What was it? I don't remember his other name, but Shashada, son of, oh, I don't know whose son. And his great exploit was to get into trouble by being hungry in the forest and eating a rabbit. And rabbits are not offerable in sacrifice, and therefore the Kshatriya should not eat them. They should only eat, actually, the animals that are remnants of sacrifice, or at least offerable. So he was cursed by his father for doing that. I think that's it. I don't think he went back to Godhead. I think he got in trouble. And some other characters in the Bhagavatam just get in trouble. We see demigods fighting with one another, kidnapping one another's wives. Especially toward the end of the ninth canto, we see everyone getting into trouble. That's to teach us renunciation. It's one of the things you have to learn in the course of study of Bhagavatam. If we remain attached to material enjoyment, then we're not going to be able to fully understand Krishna's activities. We will equate them to our activities. We're the enjoyers, and Krishna is a bigger enjoyer. But his activities are not like our activities. His enjoyment is not like our sense gratificatory attempts. We have to get rid of our taste for sense gratification to actually taste Krishna's lila. So Bhavadham is training us up in that renunciation by showing us how so many people got in trouble in the material world. It's a big theme, especially from this point on. After we hear the description of Lord Varaha's appearance, then Lord Kapila's, and we get into the fourth canto, then everybody starts getting into trouble. Practically from the fourth canto to the ninth chapter, it's largely about off the book. It's largely about the theme of renunciation. We need that much dose of it, of renunciation. We have to get done with it, with our material attachment, so that we can fully enter the realm of enjoying or of relishing Krishna's pastimes and even participating in them. This is our programmed course of instruction. This is all we have to study. We're studying these other things, I hope, only so that we will be able to more fully get the benefit of Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, the Gyanis are simply picking up crumbs of, you know, dry oil cakes that will not win them the benefit, the real benefit of life. You will not get Krishna's lotus feet in exchange for all the knowledge in the world any more than you can buy his lotus feet with all the money in the world. Atapi te deva padam buja dvaya prashada leshanu grihita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno nachanyo ekopi chiram vichindam. What to speak of getting Krishna's full mercy, you cannot even understand Krishna by the ordinary process of accumulating knowledge. He doesn't show himself. He hides himself to the Gyanis and the speculators and the yogis. He doesn't reveal himself. He does not please to reveal himself. So therefore, Brahma says that only one who gets at least one drop of the mercy of your lotus feet can understand your glories. And anybody else, he can speculate for millions of years and he won't understand you. He won't begin to properly understand you. So here we are. We must have gotten some drop of mercy that we're interested in studying Srimad Bhagavatam and actually approaching Krishna's lotus feet. I hope we're not doing this just because Prabhupada said we have to do it in the morning. We have to brush our teeth and we have to study Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, we don't brush our teeth, you know, we'll get sick. Our teeth will fall out. You know, we don't study Srimad Bhagavatam, something else bad will happen. No. This should be our pleasure. This should be our interest. That here we're going to discover Krishna in these shlokas. This is our window into the spiritual realm. If we can just gain that appreciation, then our life is successful. It's a Bhagavatam appreciation class. Although Jaitavada Maharaj does not like the word appreciation.
Why?
It's misused. Because what does it mean to appreciate something? It really means, supposedly in the dictionary, to understand the worth, the value of something. Appreciate originally means to calculate how much something is worth. Like you take a diamond and, you know, and make an estimate that it's worth, you know, $5,000. That's an appreciation. But we use the word appreciate to mean anything and nothing. So Jaitavada Maharaj is right, but still sometimes I like, I don't know, the word sort of fits sometimes. We want to learn how to appreciate Krishna and understand his worth. We can't really measure it, but we should get some taste and some attraction. Then our life is successful. That's the purpose of our study. So we shouldn't become dry Gyanis. We should just be eager to get some attraction to the taste of Krishna's lotus feet. Hare Krishna. Okay, any questions or comments?
So if Slipnor fell down to the Satyam, according to Shrinath's son.
Yes, this is Vishnath.
Yeah, but according to
Shrinath. Oh, Shrinath,
so
yeah.
I'm saying if.
He didn't say. That was my idea. I don't think Shrinath
said. He said, Rasayam Rasatale.
Okay, yes, he did say, you're right.
I mean, if that happened, so the earth just fell down and he ended up. If it fell down to the bottom of the ocean, it's understandable. It just fell down to the bottom of the ocean, it's lays down in the bottom of the ocean. But it just was falling down and then hanged up.
No, I think that's also metaphorical, although he doesn't say it's metaphorical. I mean, it's a historical fact. We all know, you know, that in the past time, the earth was in the water.
Yes.
Not it wasn't stuck in a cave, you know, in the Satala region. Yes. So I think this is also metaphorical. You know, where'd he go? He went to Rasatala, you know, because that's below us. We don't know, we're not familiar with what's below the earth, especially way below it. We don't see any Garbhodak Ocean, we just read about it in books. So when we say, where'd the earth go? Oh, it went down to Rasatala. It actually went way beyond Rasatala, but we don't know so much about what's below the earth anyway, so we just say it like that. It's figurative. You know, it went to Rasatala and it went way past Rasatala. You know, just like, you know, flight so-and-so is leaving for New York, but it's also going beyond New York to Philadelphia and Chicago, but they can't, you know, they just say it's going to New York. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.